There's no question we need to improve our customer service.
Well, improve it. You need to fire everybody and rehire them because they ain't doing their job.
Veterans offer sharp criticism to the head of the VA at a hearing in Wasilla. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 14th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the painful process of mastering aerial silks in Sitka.
You can't even hold on to the silks to do the things that you want to do. And then you wake up with these like lobster claw hands and you have to kind of stretch them back.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
A listening session held last night in Wasilla by the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs was dominated by complaints about the healthcare system for veterans. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the VA is struggling in Alaska to rebuild trust as policy changes unfold from Washington, D.C., all the way to the state's most remote clinics.
They'll listen.
They do not listen.
No!
On the green AstroTurf soccer field inside Wasilla's Menards Sports Center, a crowd of hundreds, mostly older, turned out to talk about the VA. Speaking from a stage without any notes or script, Secretary Robert McDonald gave an overview of the massive problems hampering the VA's service in recent years.
Obviously, the Department of Veterans Affairs had a crisis. The primary reason, as I looked at the situation, was the aging of the American veteran population.
There are more veterans coming on the rolls, and also more recognition of things like post-traumatic stress, hepatitis C, from Vietnam-era blood transfusions, and exposure to Agent Orange. McDonald says that just as needs are ballooning, there's a compounding shortage of staff.
We didn't have enough doctors or nurses. When I first testified in front of Congress, I said I need to hire 28,000 medical professionals nationally.
Staffing concerns have been an issue in Alaska, particularly at the nearby Matsu Valley Clinic. At the heart of the crisis, though, according to McDonald, are congressional budgets that cap spending on veteran health. But where to lay blame for such enormous problems was one of the many, many things the crowd pushed back against.
1 hour with all of us? Come on, let's get real.
Mike Coons is a retired Air Force sergeant who got in a heated exchange with McDonald.
And I thank Dan Sullivan for making you come up here.
Who made me
specifically
come
with that packet came a notice of privacy.
Wait. Let's be clear. Nobody made me come here.
Dan Sullivan had a lot to do with this.
No, he didn't. He had nothing to do with it.
Okay. Anyway.
Testimony was overwhelmingly critical of the VA, filled with stories of personal misfortune and professional misconduct, some stretching back decades. James Perkins is a recent vet from the 10th Mountain Division who drove up from the Kenai Peninsula. He says, in spite of efforts to overhaul the system in both Alaska and the U.S., it's still vastly insufficient considering the need.
I've lost over six brothers that I've served with in less than a year to suicide. And I've almost been a victim of veteran suicide myself. The struggle is real.
Stories of suicide, overmedication, and VA staffers too overworked or indifferent to help got cheers of agreement from the crowd. Joe Oswald Jr. says many local veterans are afraid to raise problems they've experienced.
Me speaking here is going to get me retaliation from VA. And VA is part of the reason some veterans commit suicide because they suggest suicide.
All right, well,
nobody is addressing it, sir. Everybody's just passing the buck and hoping you go away.
Yeah, listen, there's no question we need to improve our customer service.
Well, improve it. You need to fire everybody and rehire them because they ain't doing their job.
As Secretary McDonald listened, he would periodically refer people to VA staffers set up at tables at the back of the event. Scott Harrison is a Marine Corps vet who lost his home from spiraling health problems. He doesn't expect any one person to solve all of his health issues, but says the frustration for many, himself included, is wrangling complex paperwork just to get plugged in to their benefits.
Nobody knows who I'm supposed to talk to.
They cannot find my records. I was at so many different duty stations, so many different bases, so many different operations. There's absolutely no way that every record along the path is lost.
McDonald interrupted him to flag down a staffer to get the Marines' info.
Let's try to find your records.
Harrison spent about 15 minutes talking with a VA employee as she scribbled down notes. Afterward, he explained that in spite of struggling to find enough care, he does see people trying hard to help within a flawed system.
I think people are emotional on all of this, and I think maybe people are wanting to blame the secretary or hold him to task. The man's doing a job.
The secretary stayed late to take more questions, but had to hustle out afterwards to make his flight. He called from the road to explain why he wants visits like this one to be more than just a show.
You know, there shouldn't be a single thing that we hear that we don't work on. But we follow up on everything.
That's crazy. So I thought that was sort of a, you know, kind of a general promise, but you guys, your team literally follows up on the testimony you hear?
Every single thing.
The secretary's visit also included a trip to Kotzebue and a headstone ceremony on Wednesday in Point Hope. In Wasilla, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska's members of Congress are critical of the reason for President Obama's visit to Alaska later this month. As KUCB's John Ryan reports, the president says it's about climate change.
The folksy video.
Hi, everybody. Later this month, I'm going to Alaska.
Features dripping glaciers, raging wildfires, and Alaska natives hanging salmon to dry.
As Alaskan permafrost melts, some homes are even sinking into the ground. The state's God-given natural treasures are all at risk.
In the video, the president says he's coming to Alaska because it's on the front lines of our changing climate, with lives and communities already being disrupted.
Because what's happening in Alaska isn't just a preview of what will happen to the rest of us if we don't take action. It's our wake-up call. The alarm bells are ringing. And as long as I'm president, America will lead the world to meet this threat before it's too late.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says she hopes President Obama will keep his eyes open rather than come to Alaska with a predetermined agenda.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to welcoming the President of the United States to Alaska, his first official trip to see our state. I think it is somewhat disappointing, though, that he apparently intends to use this as nothing more than a backdrop for climate change.
Fellow Republican Congressman Don Young used less diplomatic language. In a press release, Young said he hopes the trip won't be a platform for the president to, quote, pander to extreme interest groups using Alaska as a poster child for their reckless agenda. Young described that agenda as locking up critical resources like oil, gas, and minerals. The White House video does not mention the Alaska and climate-related policy that's been making national headlines this summer.
We have news here that the U.S. has issued conditional approval for Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, that is, to drill in the Arctic.
With federal approval, Shell began drilling last month in the Chukchi Sea. The company is hoping the Interior Department will approve deeper drilling into oil-bearing rocks any day now. Environmental groups say the administration's green lighting of Arctic drilling just doesn't square with Obama's stated aim of leading the world in fighting climate change.
It's a pretty evident contradiction.
Margaret Williams works on Arctic issues for the World Wildlife Fund in Anchorage.
It is absolutely clear that greenhouse gases are driving change in the Arctic. And to solve the climate problem, we have to be stemming the source of greenhouse gases.
Greenhouse gases come primarily from burning fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas. International climate negotiators will meet in Paris in December. They'll try to agree on how fast to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Their aim? Keeping the Earth's climate from warming more than 2 degrees Celsius. A study this year by British energy researchers found that climate change can only be kept under 2 degrees by leaving Arctic oil in the ground. In Unalaska, I'm John Ryan.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, when a glacier calves with enough force to shake the earth.
Maybe the size of this particular ice chunk was very large, and as it fell into the water, it created lots of energy.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaska's business travelers across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com. Baby salmon live here, right in our backyards and neighborhoods. Go out, explore, and take the Baby Salmon Challenge. For more information, go to babysalmon.fish. This announcement is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Doyon plans to drill another oil and gas exploration well in the Nenana area. It will be the third the company has sunk into the oil and gas-rich basin. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the Interior Regional Native Corporation is looking for a commercially developable deposit to supply local and broader energy demand.
Doyon CEO Aaron Schutt announced the new exploration well project at a press conference at the corporation's Fairbanks headquarters.
Last winter, we ran an extensive 3D seismic program just west of the community of Nenana, about 50 square miles. We processed the data, got recommendations on next steps, and we're very excited to announce the well.
Schutt says the drilling planned for next summer on land leased from the state about 7 miles west of Nenana is between the two earlier Doyon exploration wells. The new well is being named after the Nenana Village Corporation, Taugatili, which draws its moniker from a local hill, something Doyon Board Chairman Ori Williams believes may benefit the project.
Well, Chief Peter John used to say that mountain is just something floating in the distance, and back in the old time days when they traveled the rivers, they could see that Taugatili Hill floating out in the distance, a good place to camp, and that was a major landmark, so there will be some spirituality to this well, and there will be some good luck coming with it.
Doyon and other companies have explored the Nenana Basin for decades, but have yet to find a commercially viable oil and gas deposit. Schutt says geology at the latest drill site looks promising.
Looking at the structure in this location, we're very, very optimistic, and you can see that we and our experts in particular put a 1 in 2 chance of a producible gas field in this next well.
Schutt says natural gas from the project could serve the local area and other parts of the state, noting Nenana's location along the Tanana River, on which gas could be barged to villages. Schutt won't put a price tag on the project, but says State of Alaska oil and gas exploration tax credits are instrumental in pursuing it.
Wildcat exploration is not for the faint of heart, and the state's program is certainly a big part of Doyon's efforts in the Nenana-Minto Basin.
Citing the state's budget deficit earlier this summer, Governor Walker cut $200 million in oil industry tax credits from the state budget, leaving another $500 million intact. State Representative Steve Thompson of Fairbanks says the cut hurts smaller energy company projects.
Like this project, you know, I mean, they're going to go ahead with it, but are they going to be delayed? I think right now, already this year, we've got $460 million worth of applications for tax credits, which just about reaches the $500 million that is going to be available.
Representative Thompson notes that the credits are paid out on a first-come, first-served basis. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The U.S. Equal Employment and Opportunity Commission ruled in late July that sexual orientation discrimination in the workplace is illegal because it is a form of sex discrimination. Some of the most common types of discrimination LGBT people face are in the workplace and in housing. Despite this, Alaska statewide and Anchorage anti-discrimination commissions don't offer protections for gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender people. KTOO's Lakedra Chavis has the story.
Just imagine if you couldn't call the fire department because you were LGBT. I mean, that's an analogy to make. If you are LGBT, you should be able to call any state agency and get the same service.
That's human rights lawyer Caitlin Shortell. She represented the same-sex couples that sued the state for the right to marry.
I mean, this is an injustice that needs to be corrected.
The Alaska State Commission for Human Rights and the Anchorage Equal Rights Commissions refer LGBT discrimination complaints to a toll-free number for the federal EEOC. Both the state and Anchorage commissions have work-sharing agreements with the EEOC and receive a portion of their budget from the federal agency. However, the funding does not require commissions to enforce civil rights laws as the EEOC interprets them. An initial interview request for this story, the commission's directors, Paula Haley for the state and Pamela Bassler for Anchorage, both refused to be recorded and would not answer questions directly. Neither director responded to subsequent interview requests.
I don't like any form of discrimination at all.
That's Governor Bill Walker. Disliking discrimination doesn't mean he's willing to change up the state commission members and the director, who serve at his pleasure.
At this point, we don't intend to address this issue, and that shouldn't be a surprise.
Walker says his administration will not introduce legislation on this issue or any other social issue. He says he's not reviewed the priorities of the state's human rights commissioners or the commission's executive director.
Well, no, I don't want to be judgmental of what Human Rights Commission is or isn't doing, but I will say that we are working on that issue ourselves.
What issues are you referring to?
the issue of and that has come up in the past, of them having someone, some venue to record circumstances where they feel they have been discriminated against.
In an earlier written statement, the governor said he'd leave it to the commission to decide whether to accept LGBT discrimination complaints or complaints from any other class. In other words, the state commission is actively choosing to not provide coverage. Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz says he wants to see equal protections under the law.
And has the same protections, whether you're straight or gay or lesbian, transgender, bisexual, whatever it is, everybody should have the same protections under the law.
But later in the interview, Berkowitz said he was unsure of how the Anchorage Commission currently handles these complaints, and it didn't mention any specific plans to address the issue. And Juneau, I'm Lakie Drashavis.
The Walker Mulott administration has nominated Tlingit civil rights leader Elizabeth Paratovich to be on the new $10 bill. The U.S. Treasury is collecting nominations of women who were champions for democracy to put on the redesigned note. Paratovich and her husband Roy were leaders in the campaign for equal rights for Alaska Natives. She's most famous for her 1945 speech to the Territorial Senate during debate on a bill to prohibit racial discrimination in the state. Speaking as an Alaska Native Sisterhood representative, Paratovich addressed those referring to natives as savages. She said, quote, "I would not have expected that I, who am barely out of savagery, would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights." The Alaska Civil Rights Act passed. Walker, in his nomination, wrote that Paratovich helped make Alaska, quote, "the nation's first organized government to end legal discrimination." About 30 earthquakes have hit the Yakutat area this week. The Gulf of Alaska City, about 250 miles northwest of Juneau, is in a fault zone, and quakes aren't unusual. But this swarm is caused by calving glaciers in a nearby bay, not movement of the Earth's crust. Alaska Earthquake Information Center seismologist Natalia Rupert says it happens all the time, but she says at least one of this week's tremors were stronger than usual.
Maybe the size of this particular ice chunk was very large, and as it fell into the water, it created lots of energy.
Most glaciers are retreating and thinning as climate change increases melting. Rupert says that could eventually lead to more quakes from moving blocks of crust.
If the glaciers keep melting and if they keep losing the mass, the pressure on the surface of the Earth becomes less. And so on a very long time scale, the lessening of this pressure may actually influence the tectonic forces and the pressure on the faults in the area.
Since Monday morning, at least 28 glacial quakes have hit the Yakutat Bay area.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Jillian Rogers. This week on AK, soaring. The circus is coming to Sitka, Alaska, but the performers aren't from out of town. They are ordinary citizens who in the past 2 years have learned to climb, swing, and soar. Led by an aerialist with roots in Alaska, Sitka Cirque is dreaming up a new kind of circus that provides as much thrill to the participants as it does to the audience. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Okay, you ready? On your marks, get set.
Franny Donahoe watches as her students climb, not to the top of a dunk tank or a trapeze,
look at the silk dance, look how wave,
but up a flowing piece of fabric rigged from the ceiling and falling dramatically to the floor, like a stage curtain. It's called a silk. Donahoe has rigged four of them above what used to be the town's swimming pool. Part of the drama of silks is the height, and within seconds, her students are 20 feet in the air.
Part of the thing, you know, when I was starting out, you know, you go, I'm like, oh, I'm teaching aerial silks, and everyone goes, what? What is that? Well, now I say, oh, I'm teaching aerial silks, and they all go, oh, you're the one doing that thing with everybody up in the air, and I heard about that.
Today, Donahoe is leading an evening class for her advanced students. Aerial silks was invented by Cirque du Soleil in the mid-90s. Performers wrap, drop, swing, and spiral their bodies on the silk to music.
And let's find our way back down to the ground.
All kinds of music. Woo! Yeah. Donahoe grew up dancing in Sitka, without any dreams of running away with the circus. She started learning ballet at the age of 10. She was the Snow Queen in Sitka's first local performance of The Nutcracker. But when she moved to London in 2008 to light up professional stages, the circus found her.
Every agency that I came up against, they said, oh, you're a dancer, great, but can you do it in the air? So after enough of those people kind of saying, can you do it in the air, I went, okay, yes, why not?
Donahoe picked it up quickly. She returned to Sitka in 2014 and opened a grassroots circus program with aerial silks at its core. In the past year, 95 students enrolled in her classes, some with prior training in dance or climbing, but for most, their last pull-up was on the monkey bars in kindergarten. And they're exactly the kinds of people Donahoe wants to teach.
The ones that say I can't are the ones that I'm most wanting to succeed, because for me, what is important isn't how, you know, well somebody can execute a skill. It's how far they progress from where they started.
And sometimes that means being painfully honest with yourself about your body's limitations. Taylor White is an aquarium manager. She's constantly moving buckets of rocks and shifting aquariums around. She joined Cirque to improve her upper body strength and said those first 2 weeks were brutal.
You can't even hold on to the silks to do the things that you want to do because you can't hold yourself on the silk for long enough. And then you wake up with these like lobster claw hands and you have to kind of stretch them back.
White even broke her pinky once during a drop, which is when you wrap the silk around you and free fall so that the silk catches you before you hit the ground. That drop, which used to be her nemesis, is now her favorite. She performed it at the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines last month.
It's a total trust thing and trusting that the silks are wrapped correctly and that your body can handle that drop.
And according to Zeke Blackwell, when you finally get it, it's pure exhilaration.
There's nothing like it. All of the lights in your body go off at once.
Blackwell was obsessed with the circus growing up.
I wanted to be one of the 40 clowns that would come out of the small car and hit each other on the nose and fall around and eat pie.
Blackwell explains that modern circus is trying to showcase something that's a little less slapstick and a lot more human.
You still get the flashiness and the tricks and the amazing marvel that you do in your traditional circus, but it's all channeled through people and through the human form.
Okay, so last group.
Donahoe just signed a lease for a new space for the circus program, and she wants to add more classes this fall, juggling and acro dance. She's not aiming for perfection. Rather, she wants to create a space where students don't have to worry about wowing audiences and can simply learn to be in awe of themselves.
How many adults are allowed the time to play, to not be limited by what you think is possible, but to allow yourself to discover what can be possible?
And sometimes that means getting off the ground. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. Zach Carruthers is the bass player for Portugal The Man. The band formed in Alaska, but now resides in Portland. Currently, they're in L.A. recording material for their 8th studio album. Carruthers says he originally played lead guitar, but his fellow bandmates talked him into playing bass.
At first, I played lead guitar in my terrible high school band. I felt like playing bass was a step down. It's like, nah, man, I don't want to play bass, but I miss playing with people so much. It's like, okay, I bought a car to go to band practice. I bought a bass, and first day, I just loved it. And first practice, I'm like, I'm going to be a bass player forever. It kind of hit me right then. Any band playing nowadays, whether they know it or not, are influenced by the Beatles. If they deny it, the bands they do like were influenced by the Beatles. They paved the way for any and all progressive rock. And when we first started the band, actually, that was our idea. We wanted a mix of the Beatles and the Wu-Tang Clan. You know, there's a bunch of little moments where we like, oh my God, we've made it. There's all these milestones, and those keep happening, you know. The first time I went to a different city that I'd never been to and saw kids singing along to our songs, I thought we'd made it. First time we went to Europe, I thought, you know, we've made it, and we'll never stop. There's always another milestone. I personally miss Alaska a lot. I would live there if it wasn't so, it's just far away. We have to travel so much. I would spend more time in a plane than I would in my house if I lived up there. So unfortunately, while we're still touring this hard, I can't live there, but I will return there. I plan on raising children and dying there. So we've actually got several different projects going on at the same time, but we will be releasing music soon, and we will have word on that very soon. But Alaska will be the first to know.
Zach Carruthers plays bass for Portugal the Man. The band returns home to play at the State Fair on September 2nd. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Jillian Rogers.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Wasilla, John Ryan in Onalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Lakeira Chavis and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.